Hi, this is Martha. Did you know that besides hosting Animal World, I'm also an animal behavior therapist and trainer with more than 40 years of professional experience? I work with you privately in your home or over the phone to help you understand your animal friends and resolve whatever behavior training or healing problems you've got going on. Most of my expertise is with cats and dogs, but I sometimes work with other types of animals as well. So whether it's puppies or kittens, adult dogs or cats, or elderly animal issues, I can help. Cats not using the litter box? Biting or scratching you or your furniture? Maybe they're fighting with each other or waking you up at night. I've got answers. Dogs barking too much, jumping or dragging you around the block on your walk? Does he have separation anxiety or chew up stuff he shouldn't? I've got answers. Whatever's going on with your animal friends, I will help you fix it. I am more than reasonably priced and often need to see you only once. I always do a free, no-obligation telephone evaluation, so give me a call and bug my voicemail if you need immediate attention. You'll find me at Martha's Canine, Feline, and All Creature Counseling at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258, and I'd love to hear from you.
On Friday, Manson Mitchell welcomed Rosemary Ellen Guiley, paranormal expert, as she shares her latest research into the dark side of the spirit world.
On Saturday, Amanda Owen talks about the power behind receiving. You don't have to be aggressive to get what you want.
In hour number two, Manson Mitchell presents a special limited series called Chime In about young people making a difference.
Bringing you fascinating talk since 2007, we are Manson Mitchell, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on Alternative Talk AM 1150.
Hi, this is Martha Norwalk, host of Animal World, and I've got a question for you. Do you or anyone you know own a business, offer a service, or a product that does something good for animals, humans, or this planet? If the answer is yes, then I'd like to invite you to become a member of the Animal World family of advertisers. Lately, people are telling me they think radio advertising is exorbitantly expensive. Well, that can be true, but not on Animal World. Did you know that for as little as $45 a week, you can have two professionally written and produced commercials at no cost to you running on the show? You also get a link to your website on the homepage of the Animal World website and two live interviews on the show. Frankly, you can't afford not to do this. So if you'd like to join our great Animal World family of advertisers, or if you need more information, go to www.marthanorwalk.com to send me an email or call me at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258. Come on, give me a call and join the family. We'd love to have you.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
Hey, good morning, y'all. I'm Martha Norwalk. Welcome you to the third hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world. Best way to pick up the stream is go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website, bring up the links that you need to stream the show. And you can also access our audio archives. The shows are all recorded. And in the archives, if you want to tell a friend about the show or listen again at another time, at the bottom of the homepage at marthanorwalk.com, you can click on the audio archives and then you'll get to the shows. And you can find us on Facebook these days, Martha Norwalk's Animal World. Give us a like while you're there. And that, of course, will ensure that all the great animal stories I post will come up on your timeline. All righty, we are educating the human animal today. And back in the studio again, our very popular magnetic soul, Morley Vankatro from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga is here. And we're in the middle of the radio version of the Sacred Secrets of Hinduism and the Lineage of Yoga. And, by the way, we did get a missing link winner. Carlene from Shoreline wins the canine hip and joint formula. So congratulations. And boy, Morley, I was just, you know, thinking so much about what we've been talking about so far. And, you know, what came for, you know, consciousness and then creation and all of that. And I just wanted to share, I think throughout my life, I've never had an issue with God, because my mother had such a strong faith, and she would repeat a couple of things often throughout my lifetime, and especially when there was a lot of controversy on that subject. You know, I mean, creation versus you know, awareness, and you know, what came first, and all of that. And there was a period of time while she was still alive where I think science was really trying to muck with things, and you know, you had the kind of the religious versions, and then you had the evolution version, and all that sort of, a lot of controversy. And my mother would simply say two things. She'd say, and also relating to, are there others in the universe, and all of that kind of stuff. And she'd say, you know, for all we know, our little world here could be one cell inside a molecule inside the chair leg of a chair in a whole nother universe. Well, that would throw me into a real tizzy. And then she would say, and the bottom line is this. They can talk all the time about this Big Bang stuff and all this, and how, or evolution and how all this stuff comes, because the bottom line is, everyone says, all at some point, a couple particles of dust came together and boom, we have that Big Bang. She says, well, where did the two particles of dust come from? And man, I would, as a kid, I would try to contemplate that, and I would immediately leave my body and I was like, anyway, it kind of scared me, but I kind of figured, well, you know, God is God. Yeah, where did it? Because I always go whenever somebody, you know, tries to say, this is how it happened. Well, okay, where did it all start? So I still don't think I have an answer to that, so I just trust. You know, it's God's department. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that we have lots of different explanations.
Yes. This part, when I first encountered it,
mm-hmm.
Was just like you. It was an experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you always keep peeling the layers of the onion, and it always feels like you have to go, there is one more level of depth that's unexplored, unless you can relate it back to something. Somewhere the loop has to close.
Right.
And this, what came before and what lives after, is that's kind of the thing that throws us into a tizzy, so to
mm-hmm.
speak.
Mm-hmm.
And this notion that it's awareness, the most fundamental thing that we distinguish ourselves as, even the definition of living versus non-living, is at some level centered around the fact that we can view ourselves, that we have an awareness of what is out there, what is in there. And in the Vedic tradition, it says, that is it. That is the most persistent reality. And that is what we go towards. And remember I said that the emphasis is on direct experience.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the direct experience that they talk about. What does it feel when we go beyond all of the artifacts of creation and go right back to its very essence? And it turns out that leaves its mark on us through a feeling. It also leaves mm-hmm. its mark on us through visions, through sounds that we hear, through a sense of vitality and power, through extraordinary peace, deep calmness, or even through wisdom, the dharma that I talked about,
mm-hmm.
right? They are all hallmarks of being closer and closer, or experiencing God, that is, this awareness. And when this experience is had, the masters tell us that words are an imperfect medium to capture it.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore they invent symbols, different kinds of symbols,
uh-huh.
to not so much represent it. There is one very famous saying in the Bhagavad Gita which says, though I am manifest in all things, I am identified with none of them. In other words, it says, everything is of God, but God himself is revealed, not revealed through anything, not fully revealed through anything. So whatever symbols that we have of either praying, worshipping, or invoking God's presence within us necessarily are incomplete until the direct experience is to be had. So this brings back to me, we've talked about many heady topics so far.
Right.
So let me transition into a fun one.
Okay.
Looking at it from the Western perspective, Hinduism's a little weird.
Okay.
Not to put too fine a point on it. Because on the one hand, if all of these odd little things, what's the deal with that many gods and goddesses? How many of them are there? And, you know, who's the big kahuna among all of them?
Uh-huh.
Is there one? I mean, is that a man? Is that a woman? What is it? So there is that aspect of it.
Right.
You know, that's kind of the odd part. And then there is just the plain weird part. We all hear stories about, it's at least weird to somebody that's not grown up in it. We hear the stories about 10 million people bathe in the river in the course of 4 days. And that happens once every 4 years. It's a big religious gathering. It's probably the biggest spiritual gathering on the planet.
Right.
Okay. The last time it happened, it was visible through a satellite photo.
Wow.
That mass of humanity was, they were able to find out. So what's the deal with that? There are other weird things. People lying on a bed of nails, walking on hot coals. So there's this, there are the odd things, there are the weird things, and there are the transcendental things, the things that we just talked about. So which one is it? Which one captures the actual spirit of it? And the answer, of course, you know this by now, is kind of all of them and none of them.
Yeah.
But let's focus on what's the deal with all the gods and goddesses. That's
okay.
When I first came to the U.S. and I came to Kansas, and it was hard for me to explain myself to my Kansan compatriots in terms of all of these gods and goddesses. So to get a sense of that, let's go back to this creation thing, that God, the eternal consciousness, had the thought of creation and set a portion of his consciousness into vibration, and that became the material creation. And what that says is that everything is of God, meaning creator didn't create, creator became the creation. Creation manifested, that everything is of God, and therefore we can approach God through symbols that most resonate with us. So a very common God in India, and now I use the term with a small g, not the capital G, because it is a symbol. Even the one that I'm about to talk about Shiva.
Yes, and that's Shiva, that's a term that many are familiar with.
Yes, and he's the patron saint of all yogis, and people worship him as God. And
so Shiva, even though Shiva is a male?
In this case, it's a male symbol. And he's usually depicted with a tiger skin and with a snake coiled around his throat, with a half moon as an ornament on his head, and a well-defined spiritual eye. And you'd have to think through, what is this saying? I mean, the first blush, this is very weird.
Yeah.
And he's got matted locks, and then when you look back, when you kind of intuit through it, and we don't have to go through the entire symbolism, but let me just give you a sense of what is going on with all these gods and goddesses. The moon, on which is a ornament on his head. He's wearing it like you wear. I don't know what you'd wear on a head, like a little flower or something.
Uh-huh.
That's the moon. You have to wonder, what would it signify? So what would the moon signify? Say to you, what does the moon represent?
Well, I guess it depends on what level. I know often the moon is referred to in the feminine, but also it is, you know, the outer space and a planet,
yes,
and that sort of thing.
Yes, it does. And from its planetary perspective, moon is how people kept time.
You
know, almost all ancient calendars are lunar calendars.
Right.
And we apply a solar correction to it to make sure that we can predict the harvest and the rains and so forth. But
yeah, that's right.
So what does it represent that somebody wears the moon as an ornament? Would it not be the fact that God is beyond time, that time itself is not part of God, meaning God is not finite in that temporal sense, that he created time. So this direct experience that somebody had, some master tried to capture it through this imagery of Shiva, that he uses moon as an ornament. And
an ornament,
those of you listeners, if you are in front of a computer, Google that word, S-H-I-V-A, Shiva, and see the images that come up, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, all right.
And there is a river there is a fountain that's coming off the top of his head.
Oh.
Which is the holy Ganges River. And again, Ganges in the Vedic tradition is the stream of enlightenment. It's that stream of wisdom that it comes out of the Godhead for us to follow it back. So one that is beyond time and is the source of all enlightenment. And now you're getting a sense of how this might become something that could be meditated upon and can give inspiration and can guide the intuition. And similarly, there are symbols of Divine Mother. Some of those are extraordinary. Yogananda himself talks a lot about Kali, his favorite Divine Mother symbol through which he related to the spirit beyond all forms. So it's a simple way of thinking about this is... If a child asks, what happens to people when they die? And we cannot use words that would make it understandable by the child. So we perhaps take the child outside, point to the stars and say, oh, they become a star. And symbolically, we are saying many things by that simple statement. But one of the things we are saying is, well, they are no longer among us, but yet they are among us.
Right.
And we are trying to convey that very hard to understand notion through this symbol. We just say, she just became a star, is in the heaven. And so these gods and goddesses are, in Hinduism, are a way to capture it. And again, one truth and the wise give it many names. That you follow these symbolic gods and goddesses back to the divine.
Okay, so they're like maybe like even the doorway to God or the divine.
Yes, and they are for those that are open to such intuitions. They can guide the intuition in a very real and extremely meaningful ways. I'll touch a little bit upon what Kathy asked right in the beginning that sacred animals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very wide question. Let me speak about it in two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
There is another very popular god called Ganesha. It's the god with the head of an elephant.
Yes.
Very, very, very beloved.
Right.
And let me see if and elephants now, are sacred.
I'm going to ask you again about pronunciation, because many people say Ganesh, but you said Ganesha. So is that Ganesha? Is that the proper pronunciation? Because I know a lot of times in Sanskrit there are A's that aren't pronounced, that are silent.
Yeah, it can go either way. It depends on the region of India that you're from. In the south, we usually say the A. That's where I'm from.
Okay.
In the north, we don't. And far be it for me to claim that my way is the right one.
Gotcha.
Let me just leave it at that. So you could say so Ganesha or Ganesha. Either
so
way
So either is,
fine. Is
correct. It depends on the area of India. Gotcha.
Depends
right.
on the area
Makes,
of
thank
the
you.
Country. And he has a head of an elephant, and it's a big belly,
mm-hmm.
and he's sitting on a rat. Okay, those of you that's a good visual right there. Very beloved animal symbol, and many, many people that I know, they've never seen Ganesha before, and they're new to this Hindu tradition or yoga or whatever brought them there. They're immediately enamored by it. And it goes far beyond just being enamored. There is a certain refinement that occurs as they meditate on this form. And again, you know what's interesting about an elephant? Of course, you all do. The trunk of the elephant is simultaneously very, very strong. It's actually used to pick up very large loads, large mm-hmm. logs, for example. That is well known, but it's also capable of extremely fine motor skills. I have personally seen this. An elephant can pick up a matchstick
wow.
with its trunk. And it refers to the fine discernment that the person on the spiritual path should have, the fine discernment of what's right and what's wrong. And that's what the elephant represents in this case.
Uh-huh.
It's the symbol of extraordinary power, but also of extraordinary refinement. And often it is, and certainly we see this in parenting or sometimes when we are placed in positions of authority, that using that authority that we are given just demands from us that we rise to higher levels of discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the trunk of the elephant is. The big belly, he really has a big belly. Again, those of you that are in front of your computers, go take a look. It's a big, huge belly. And that refers to the power of digestion, believe it or not.
The power of digestion.
Power of digestion.
Wow.
And it's referring to the fact that as we proceed on the spiritual path, whatever that path might be, it's not Hinduism, whatever your path is, that we are asked to digest life's experiences and remain calm. In the face of it.
Hmm.
And that's a sign of refinement, that we don't let life's experiences disturb us. At the center of life's storms, I stand serene. And that's a characteristic of somebody that's going farther along on the spiritual path. And that's what the big belly represents. Sitting on a rat. Rat, again, yeah. I mean, I'm talking about animals in with not necessarily in the way Kathy asked the question, but it's
right.
a fun way to pick up the topic. Rats are interesting. They are very they're very greedy. It is said that if you go into a rat's residence, I don't know what it's called, a rat hole, I guess, it has many times its body weight stored as food.
Right. Okay.
Just and this one I can speak from personal experience. India is, you know, where I grew up. We had a ton
right.
of rats.
A lot of rats.
And we had a small house, and there were no more rooms left. So I used to sleep on a little platform in the kitchen.
Wow.
That was my sleeping quarters for several years.
Ah.
And rats like kitchen because
food.
Kitchens have food in it, and so I'd hear. Rats.
So you slept with the rats, so to speak.
I literally slept with the rats. And like we were talking about at some point, we can get used to anything. Now it gives me the heebie-jeebies, but back then, rats were particularly active yesterday. They're constantly picking stuff up, and you know they cannot possibly eat them.
Right.
So rat in this case represents greed, and Ganesha is sitting on it, that he has overcome it.
Overcome the greed.
It is not sitting on him. He is sitting on it. So if you build the picture from bottom up, that you have somebody that's really has his or her greed under control, and there is enough of calmness and peace that they can digest all life's experiences, which leads to an extraordinary degree of refinement, knowing what to do with the inner power. Now, whether we cognize all of it in exactly the way I said it or not, but if the door of the intuition is open, looking at the picture of Ganesha, people tune into it at a level that is not articulated easily. And therefore, it's a very beloved symbol.
Yes.
And so it is with the monkey. I can go on and on and on. Not to say that all the symbols have, I mean, there are some odd little symbols. It is an organic religion that's been around for a while.
Well, I'm wondering too, I often think of it as that isn't the cow special or sacred in Hindu?
Cow is very sacred, and there are, for a practicing Hindu, if you go to a typical Hindu household and try to probe the source of their reverence for the cow, it usually comes down to kind of about two or three different observations. The first one is that the cow is a very gentle animal. Even see it's captured in our language. We use expressions that reflect that. The cow is a very gentle animal. It's also very sentient. I mean, you can see looking into its eyes, anybody that's been with a cow know the intelligence that's hidden behind it.
Right.
So they are very aware. The degree of awareness and the degree of intelligence coupled with gentleness brings it characteristics that can actually help us go deeper into ourselves. So, and in a kind of a story symbolic way, we are all taught as children that all the gods and goddesses, anything that's holy, that they are in the cow, quote, in the cow. Meaning, you know, there is, it's an acknowledgement of the fact that the cow has a lot to teach us. It is a very big part of the Hindu culture is to, you know, to have the holy cow, so to speak.
All right. Well, I think we better take care of advertisers here before we get too far along the hour here, so we can relatively stay on time. Well, we're not on time, but we'll get it done. And we will take care of advertisers. Everybody stay right where you are. Morali Venkatro from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga is my guest. We are educating the human animal, talking about the sacred secrets of Hinduism and the lineage of yoga. More to continue straight ahead right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Give your dog, cat, or ferret the gift of great health naturally. Make NuPro all-natural supplements an essential part of your pet's diet. NuPro makes an awesome gravy, sure to please. This gravy provides fresh nutrients for a beautiful, silky skin and coat, strong immune system, and healthy digestion, among other wonderful benefits. NuPro's joint support formula is perfect for working dogs, large breeds, and especially seniors. So go with NuPro, your pet's best friend for over 20 years. Visit online at NuProSupplements.com for more information.
Urine contamination is a common and stubborn problem. Conventional cleaning methods are not the answer. Anti-Icky Poo works quickly and naturally, and it's my all-time absolute favorite odor neutralizer. This unique bacteria enzyme solution converts the waste directly into carbon dioxide, a safe and odorless gas found in everyday clean air. Ask your vet for Anti-Icky Poo or call 1-800-745-1671. Anti-Icky Poo, it's a serious product with a funny name that really works, especially on cat urine. 1-800-745-1671.
Would you like to access portals of possibilities for transformation, consciousness, expansion, and new experiences of health and well-being? Ancient knowledge and new science tell us that everything manifests from vibratory frequencies. Jude and Paul Ponton are experts in the field of vibrational alignment and harmonic shifting. They're also co-authors of Acutonics for Dogs and Cats, and Acutonics from Galaxies to Cells, Planetary Science, Harmony, and Medicine. They can assist you in shifting frequencies for personal health, aligning and balancing your energy or the energy of your home, property, or workspace. Jude and Paul can work with you remotely, at their office, or on site if you live in the Seattle area. They also teach classes in the Acutonic Sound Healing System. Check out their website, whispering-dragon.com. That's whispering-dragon.com for descriptions of services. Or call 206-706-2836. That's 206-706-2836. You can even email them at resonate@whispering-dragon.com for information or to schedule sessions.
Hi, this is Martha. Did you know that besides hosting Animal World, I'm also an animal behavior therapist and trainer with more than 40 years of professional experience? I work with you privately in your home or over the phone to help you understand your animal friends and resolve whatever behavior, training, or healing problems you've got going on. Most of my expertise is with cats and dogs, but I sometimes work with other types of animals as well. So whether it's puppies or kittens, adult dogs or cats, or elderly animal issues, I can help. Cats not using the litter box? Biting or scratching you or your furniture? Maybe they're fighting with each other or waking you up at night. I've got answers. Dogs barking too much, jumping or dragging you around the block on your walk? Does he have separation anxiety or chew up stuff he shouldn't? I've got answers. Whatever's going on with your animal friends, I will help you fix it. I am more than reasonably priced and often need to see you only once. I always do a free, no-obligation telephone evaluation, so give me a call and bug my voicemail if you need immediate attention. You'll find me at Martha's Canine, Feline, and All Creature Counseling at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258, and I'd love to hear from you.
Make us part of your daily routine. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Hey, y'all, I'm Martha Norwalk, and boy, we're midway through the last hour of this week's edition of Animal World. You can find us here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Morley Van Cotrell from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga is in the studio. We have been doing a radio version of his class, The Sacred Secrets of Hinduism and the Lineage of Yoga, which is normally a three-part class and hours, so we can't all, you know, get to everything, but I think we're going into a different aspect now, Morley, right?
Yes, it's time to switch gears a little bit. We've been talking about big cosmic stuff,
mm-hmm.
how creation happened and everything is of God and stuff like that.
Right.
Question is, where do you go with it? You're feeling bad, things are not going well in your life, or you're troubled by an existential crisis, you've been very successful and still feel a little empty inside,
mm-hmm.
or any of the other common factors of the human condition. Any religious tradition worth its salt should provide a way for that.
Uh-huh.
And how does it happen in the Hindu or in the Vedic tradition? So, let me, we're used to saying life is a struggle for existence. Mm. We're used to thinking that way.
Right.
And then let's follow that thread a little bit. Let's say struggle for what kind of existence? So let's say you are existing, but you're in a coma. Is that acceptable? It's obviously not acceptable. So what's missing? What's missing is awareness that life is a struggle for aware, conscious existence. Okay, so you are living, you're conscious, but say you're constantly in pain, physical pain, emotional pain, there is strife. Does that work? That doesn't seem to be a valid goal in life either. Then we'll have to modify that and say, life is seeking continuous conscious existence filled with bliss, filled with happiness. And the simplifying vast tracts of philosophy, let's just say that that's the goal of life. And that's fairly reflective of, if you go all the way back to the Vedas or the Bhagavad Gita, then in the end of all of the things, all of the mantras and everything in there, this is what you find. And there is a special name for this. In Sanskrit, this is called Satchidananda.
Satchidananda.
Satchidananda. Very good. Sat is ever-existing or continuous, meaning, you know, living, you might translate it as. Chit is ever-new, meaning it's conscious, it's ever-changing, it's not boring, it's not a coma, it's not a comatose existence. Sat-chit, ananda, bliss. So it's joy that's ever-existing and ever-new. And that is the goal of life in the Vedantic tradition. And the other way of saying it, of course, is the union, yoga, with the Supreme Consciousness is also Satchidananda. So, because God is ever-existing, God is ever-new, and God is bliss. It has that Zen-like quality that that the goal and the reason are exactly the same. So then, if Satchidananda, ever-existing, ever-new bliss, is the goal, and how do we get there? So we talked about, again, let's go all the way back and say movements in consciousness is what caused creation, vibration. We even heard it in the wonderful ad that just preceded this hour, that vibration is the essence of creation. Now let's think about that for a minute. Vibration means something that's up and something that's down, or something that's left and something that's right. Duality, in other words, hot or cold, sorrow and joy. And of course, anybody that's lived for more than a decade or two will know that that is what life is, that it is up or down. And here's where the Vedas tell us something that's at least outwardly a little startling. It doesn't really say, don't try to improve the quality of life, in the sense, don't try to have more ups than downs in life. That might end up being the case, but that's not the approach. The approach is to go beyond the ups and downs, go beyond the dualities, so that the dualities don't affect us. We've all had this experience that sometimes when we feel vulnerable, everything looks bad. That we begin to, somebody says something and say, oh, what did she really mean? Is she really putting me down by what she said? And sometimes when we are not feeling vulnerable, we are strong inside, those things just slide right past us. And the Vedic yogic answer is something along those lines, that get your inner center closer to that divine union, so that life's experiences, the shifting sands, are just that, they are shifting sands. There is a part of us that's unaffected. So this in yoga has a very specific name. This is a slightly exotic Sanskrit name. It's called titiksha. Titiksha is this practice that we do that we tolerate hot and cold, ups and downs, that we deliberately, with a deliberate force of will, choose not to be affected. by those. And by doing so, we are acknowledging that our real nature, our real reality, lies beyond either the up, the emotional surge of happiness, or the down, the charge of sorrow, that neither of those define who we are, that we ourselves are beyond that. So that's yet another definition of yoga. So transcending the dualities for sustained, eternal, ever-changing bliss is that's kind of the yogic path. You take all of these intuition and direct experience and the collected wisdom of the masters, and that's what it tells us. And the technique there, it says, again, an interesting one,
mm-hmm.
says, expand the ego. Let me tell you what I mean by that. That the more we go beyond identifying with, say, my body, my house, my property, my troubles, the more we go beyond that and identify ourselves with a larger whole, that, say, we work for others, that it's okay, even if I feel a little bit uncomfortable, I'll make sure somebody else feels better.
Mm-hmm.
And this is ego expansion, meaning the ego stops identifying with its own constricted universe and goes beyond it. This is another definition of yoga. Union, meaning go beyond and unite with something that's greater. And so this one can use any of the faculties that we are given. What are our fundamental faculties? We have our body with which we can do actual work. We can, you know, we can create that table. We can earn money. We can feed ourselves. We can feed others. We can bring happiness or sorrow to others through what we do. Our body, that's one. And the yogic technique, which uses the body to expand the ego, to encompass more and more as our own, that is called karma yoga. Karma means action, the yoga of action. And, you know, these are all, there are many nuances, and I'm painting with broad brush strokes here.
Mm-hmm.
But the main technique there is to work selflessly, or work without expecting the benefits of it. It is an interesting thing to tune into. It is the thing that says, action, my duty as far as action is concerned, is to do what is in front of me to the best of my ability and not be affected by how the fruits of it might come back to me. Sometimes it might come back as criticism, sometimes it might come back as adulation, but I am personally not affected by it. I'll use what comes back to me as feedback to do a better job or tune what I'm doing, but I'll personally not be affected. That's karma yoga. The other faculty that we are given, a very powerful faculty, I said earlier on in the show, is the faculty of feeling, the heart, the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And the equivalent of selflessness, as far as emotions are concerned, is surrender or devotion. So that's the yoga of devotion. Now, Walt Whitman's poetry, for example, it's dripping with this particular aspect of yoga. That's called bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion. So some of the practices that you see being done as part of yoga, chanting, for example,
mm-hmm.
they have this as the source, that they work with the heart. And Yogananda very famously said, chanting is half the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he refers to, that we harness the most powerful faculty that we have and we redirect it in the right way.
Well, it's really fascinating because so much is coming together for me understanding-wise right now. And most of our listeners, our longtime listeners, know for me that I began a conscious spiritual path 30 or more years ago. But I didn't come, I was eventually led to Ananda back in 2010. So, and I've been with Ananda since then. But all of the things that you're describing, I can now personally attest to being a part and parcel to this particular path, which is more as a is a combination of the Eastern Western philosophies. And this, of course, there's a method to my madness here, folks. We will the next step in what we're going to do here on the air is bringing our spiritual directors from Ananda, Riemann, and Padma in to give you more of an understanding. But just for me personally, I will tell you, since 2010, in understanding these concepts and then integrating them into my life, so much about understanding, like the balance, and not, like you said, getting overly excited about things, and then you know, and having really horrible experiences, and then really positive, and the up and down stuff, which was a definition of my life. But learning from these teachings to that, you know, it's all that duality, it's the yin and the yang, and there has to be a balance here, on this planet. And so that for every really high note you hit, you have to hit the low note to balance that. And when you understand that, so that you practice this philosophy of even-mindedly and peacefully going through anything. So, I mean, just as an example, seeing fireworks and getting out there and just getting crazy excited and over the top for this. Well, I no longer allow myself to do that. And what a huge difference that makes, because energetically in your life, when you don't go off the deep end highway, then you don't have to go off the deep end and the low way to balance it, and how much better and more peaceful life becomes. And then when it comes to the becoming one and the joy and the bliss and all of that, well, simply by focusing on our true path of the union of coming back and becoming one again with you know, God or whatever you want to call it, and serving and caring more about others than oneself, but also then practicing the meditation, and of course what I came for, the Kriya Yoga meditation. Well, I know the science is beginning to catch up and all the great benefits and how you feel, but I can just say, once going through all the education and getting the Kriya Yoga and starting to do that, it was like, it was almost like a brick wall that hit me one day. It was all of a sudden like, wow, you know, I just feel happy all the time. I just have joy in my heart all the time. I'm not experiencing those extreme highs and lows, but just walking around with this feeling of joy and bliss and not really knowing where it's coming from. It's coming from within, but realizing this is a part of the Kriya Yoga and why I start doing that. And then now to be introducing myself to the Hatha Yoga, and only after two classes, for crying out loud, I'm thinking, wow, this is now happening to my physical body as well. And I mean, it truly is life transforming.
Yes, it can be. And it frequently is. There is
Let's take care of advertisers for the last time. It'll be a short break this time, and let's get that out of the way, and then we can come back and kind of conclude with your final thoughts. All right, stay right where you are. Animal World continues straight ahead right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Massage is good for everyone, including your pets. Check out the Northwest School of Animal Massage's exciting new Vashon Island location. The Northwest School of Animal Massage offers a full schedule of classes, including T-Touch, aromatherapy, and manual ligament therapy, plus massage for canines and small and large animal certification. Visit online at nwsam.com for registration details and to enroll online. For more information, call 877-836-3703. That's 877-836-3703. Or check out the Northwest School of Animal Massage on Facebook.
Hi, I'm Eileen Grimes, and I am an astrologer in the greater Seattle area, and I am the host of the Jupiter Rising Show, which airs every Sunday at 2 p.m. Our show is about the astrological world with fun features, wonderful guests, and your phone calls. So don't forget Sundays at 2 p.m. The Jupiter Rising Show right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
Hi, this is Martha Norwalk, host of Animal World, and I've got a question for you. Do you or anyone you know own a business, offer a service, or a product that does something good for animals, humans, or this planet? If the answer is yes, then I'd like to invite you to become a member of the Animal World family of advertisers. Lately, people are telling me they think radio advertising is exorbitantly expensive. Well, that can be true, but not on Animal World. Did you know that for as little as $45 a week, you can have two professionally written and produced commercials at no cost to you? Running on the show? You also get a link to your website on the homepage of the Animal World website and two live interviews on the show. Frankly, you can't afford not to do this. So if you'd like to join our great Animal World family of advertisers, or if you need more information, go to www.marthanorwalk.com to send me an email or call me at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258. Come on, give me a call and join the family. We'd love to have you.
Easy on the ears, good for the soul. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Hey, y'all, I'm Martha Norwalk. Thanks for spending part of your Sunday morning with us here on Animal World. You can find us here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. And we are wrapping up here our Sacred Secrets of Hinduism and the Lineage of Yoga with Morley Venkatrow from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga. But Morley was just sharing with me during the break, even though we've covered a lot of territory, you say barely 40% maybe of what you usually cover in your classes. So that just leaves us an open end here. The next time I have a show we put together, we'll continue our discussion then. But in the meantime, we have to kind of wrap this up and conclude in the last 5 minutes here or so. So what are you going to leave us with today?
So let me, one of the reasons why I give this class, my intent behind this, is to, as yoga gets increasingly more popular, there is always a question, do I have to be a practicing Hindu to practice yoga? Let me say right off the bat, the answer is absolutely not. One, in a sense, has nothing to do with the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So let me take that a little further. Yoga is a practice, and now I'm talking about yoga in its full form. There is Hatha Yoga for the body, and there are the meditative practices for refining the mind and taking us back to the source. It's a practice that works primarily with energy, which is the fourth faculty that we have. Mm. In addition to the body and the feelings and the intellect, we have energy. And yoga works with that. It brings the energy back into its center, into its main channel in the body, and works with it to refine our awareness. Remember, that's the primary place where we are going. Refine our awareness, take it beyond the dualities, into our experience of God, whatever that might be for you, whatever tradition you're from. It does not replace it, certainly does not undermine it, and definitely not contradict it. It complements it. Use it as an additional tool to satisfy your spiritual hunger. And definitely speaking from my experience as a person that's guided classes on this for about over 15 years now, mm-hmm. I can say that people of all traditions have come and found these techniques to be valuable. Tune into the other aspects that I said, that about consciousness, about awareness, about duality. And if they help you deepen your practice, so be it. If they are intellectual curiosities, so be it. But the one aspect of this Vedic tradition that is at the center of all yogic practices is direct experience. That's what it's all about. And you don't have to take any book or my word or any teacher's word for it. Practice these techniques and see what it does to you. If it makes you more centered, gives you solace where there was sorrow before, then go for it. And if it isn't, well, you've tried something else. And almost always, it does.
Well, that's what I was just talking about, what it's done for me. I mean, all of a sudden, I just realized one day, I'm just always happy. And there's that feeling of joy and bliss coming from within that I had never experienced before, and it's consistent. And I can now say, if you follow, I follow off the practices, it goes away, but it comes instantly back in once you get back on track. And now with the physical body coming into alignment, it really is quite phenomenal. But all of these techniques, like you say, can be practiced by anyone.
Yes, thank you, Martha, for bringing that up. I frequently have people tell me that they can't do yoga because they are not flexible. And my tongue-in-cheek reply to that is, if you were, why would you need to? But besides that, that's really not the point. Yoga is, it's very encompassing. No matter what your physical state is, there is a way to modify it and refine it and customize it for that. I am yet to find somebody that couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's why I said in the Hatha yoga class that I'm in now, there's young, there's old, there's skinny, there's very overweight, and everybody is doing it.
Yeah.
It really is quite wonderful. And of course, there are ongoing classes. Now, I'm also realizing, I sense a difference between Ananda yoga and then all the other yoga that's out there. And I really appreciate the affirmations that you do when you're doing the poses, and I think that has a lot to do with the great feeling that you get, how it really transforms things.
Yes,
and so, folks, you can find out more about yoga classes because Morley, you actually teach. I mean, you're my teacher. With Haley at this point, the Hatha Intensive will begin again in Seattle
End of January, the last Tuesday of January, I believe.
Okay, in Seattle and in Bothell, and there's ongoing classes all the time, yoga at East West Bookshop in Seattle, also at the Ananda Meditation Temple in Bothell.
At the temple, we have a class every single day of the week except Sunday.
Wow, yeah, so lots available to you folks. And Morley, I've just got to say thank you so much for coming in and spending another Sunday with us. I'll be scheduling you again because we obviously have lots more to talk about. If you stay tuned today, you can hear an encore presentation of Mystic Radio with Robin Alexis. Next week, of course, encore presentation of Darcy Pariso, our last show together, and find out what Bamboo Elephant had to say. And 2 weeks from today, Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and Anything That Helps Our Animal Friends Sunday. And by golly, we've talked our way through 3 hours again. Mike, thank you so much. Kathy, so glad to have you back. And our best and love and prayers for Eric and a continued speedy recovery. And as always, let me remind you, animals have feelings too. So treat your animal friends better than family. And please always be kind to open your heart. Share your love with all living things. And I'll talk to you again next week.